Hey there! With me today is Benjamin from Copycat Cafe. And maybe if you're more into SaaS, then probably you might have seen him building Lorelight, a GEO tool. So we are here to talk about all of it today. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to talk about the journey.
Sure, of course. And it's been so funny. I think I told you about it, but I first saw a post about you, your post, I guess, that my friend and another founder liked. And you were talking about Copycat Cafe there and, how you think learning the language is the best. And I thought, oh my God, it's so cool. That's exactly how I like to learn my languages. And I thought maybe one day I want to interview Benjamin. And then maybe 5 days later, I'm getting an email. Do you want to do a podcast? And like, okay, that's serendipity right there. So I'm really, really happy to see you here.
Yeah, me
Uh,
too.
but let's maybe talk about your background first. Like, how did you start doing Copycat Cafe in the first place? Because, everyone says if you want to do SaaS, do not start with B2C.
Yeah, that's I read that a lot. So I actually, so when I finished high school in France, my biggest dream was to leave France, actually. Not because I hated the country, just because I wanted to discover the world. And I always had this feeling that while I loved France, it still wasn't really the right place for me. So I actually went to volunteer for 1 year in South Korea, and there I taught French and a bit of English, which was hilarious at the time because my English was pretty bad. But and I realized actually that all the materials I had for teaching were very grammar focused. None of it was focused on actually speaking. And so I was working with all these Korean kids who actually knew French grammar way more than me, but were terrified of saying anything, only knew phrases that were very, well, I would say very weird sounding to a native. And so I just figured, okay, I will just start a blog and teach people French the way it's spoken. And so the blog initially made money. Actually, I think the first time I earned money was, well, I probably shouldn't say that on the podcast, but that was by selling a backlink, which back then was kind of acceptable, or at least more acceptable than now. Then I made money with affiliate links. Like I started talking about other courses and stuff like that, and somehow people actually, started visiting the blog, and I made a bit of money with that. Then I experimented with selling an ebook about how to learn French. So that was mostly like advice. I sold it on Amazon. I made a print version. And then one day I met another French guy who had been creating a French course, not a French course, a course to help people learn English. And he actually convinced me that I could do it too, actually, because I always had this idea that creating a French course was, the kind of thing experts do, and that maybe in 10 years I could do it. But he was like, no, you can just start now. So I did it, and people started buying it, and I got really cool feedback. Like, people telling me, I have been learning French for years, and but every time I go to Paris, I freeze. But actually, with your course, I went there and I actually managed to have basic conversations, and people were much more friendly, and so that's really motivated me. And then when COVID happened, my SEO traffic dropped quite a lot, and my income went down, and I got a bit demotivated. But I had this idea in the back of my mind that I had always wanted to learn how to code. So I was like, well, we are all in lockdown, there isn't much to do, I'm not really earning that much money anymore, why not just do it? So I did it, and then I built the French Together app, which is now called Copycat Cafe. And I just launched it, and yeah, from there I basically became a SaaS founder.
Okay. Well, that's a very, kind of, it is what it is kind of story.
Yeah, I
No,
basically
that's
just rolled with it and was like, yeah, sure, why not? Like
that's
I hear
great.
all this, I hear a lot of very, I guess, planned startup stories. And for me, nothing was really planned. I just went along with the flow, and it somehow worked in the end.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, yeah, I struggled with a problem, and then I tried this, and then 100 gazillion startups failed, and then I finally launched this one. And with you, it was like, yeah, I did
it's very actually, it's actually very funny because, you know, now that I know much more SaaS founders and I know more about marketing, I realize on paper it was a terrible idea. Like, it had everything to fail. It was like a low price product. Language learning is something that most people kind of want to do, but don't really want to pay for it. Then there is obviously Duolingo, which is a huge competitor with a huge marketing budget that also happens to be mostly free.
Exactly. And so
I feel like my entire business story on paper makes no sense, but I guess it turns out sometimes it just works out still.
Right. I mean, sometimes you're in the right place at the right time with a good product at the same time, because, I mean, even if you are lucky, shitty product will never really stick. But about Duolingo, because you started talking about it, and, you know, I tried it, obviously, you know, I've been nomading for 15 years, so I've learned or tried to learn a few languages. Will be pursuing Portuguese, and I heard that you are adding new languages too.
Yeah, we'll probably add Portuguese soon. Yeah.
Okay, great. So, and yeah, I tried Duolingo, and, you know, I kind of came to a conclusion that Duolingo is just this, you know, vitamin pill that you're taking. You don't know if it helps you, but it's kind of there, you know, so why not take it? Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it's just this quick dopamine. Okay, I did something right. At the end of the day, probably learned nothing, but it was fun. So in case of Duolingo, I think the gamification is huge. So people at the end of the day just want a game. So I think my question is not how you're competing with Duolingo as a language learning app, but how are you competing with it as an entertainment app?
So that's... honestly, that's one side I neglected a lot initially, because I had this very pure idea that, you know, you don't need all the gamification, you don't need all the bells and whistles, you just need to learn useful phrases. And that worked out great with a very core group of people who were extremely motivated, but obviously it didn't work as well with people who just wanted to learn French in a more casual way. And so lately we have been adding much more mechanism to make the app more addictive. So now for more, you can speak a phrase and then we have an AI that compares your pronunciation to native pronunciation and tells you you're like 80% similar. And then you can share it with your friends, you can challenge them. But we have also... so one aspect of making the app more addictive as well has been making lessons simpler. So that, you know, you can just quickly complete a lesson in 10 minutes and feel like you actually achieved something. Because when we started the app, it was more like 40 minutes per session, which is pretty hardcore. And again, it worked great for some people, but most people got discouraged. So we have been adding way more a mechanism and learn from, you know, social media in terms of how to make an app addictive. And yeah, basically. But actually one downside we didn't foresee is that some of the initial users actually hate that it's more addictive now. They're like, why did you add all these games? I don't want Duolingo.
Yeah.
And so it has been a bit tough, you know, to find the right balance of making it usefully addictive, I guess, while not making it too gamified.
True. Yeah. I mean, I also completely understand that. Like, sometimes you're so much in this, okay, let's just check off the boxes in your day that, yeah, you want, okay, 10 minutes of language and like 10 minutes of this and 10 minutes of that. So your attention span is really short. So when it's 40 minutes, I can totally get that some people are like, oh no, like you have to get kind of bored now to to do that. Nobody wants to get bored anymore.
That's also why actually we want to maybe add Greek as a language, because then we can both learn it and really, you know, feel what using the app is like. Because obviously there is a big difference
because
between...
because you moved to Greece.
Yes, I mean to Cyprus, where, you know, they speak Greek a lot. And so I think we'd probably add Greek fairly soon. even though that will unnecessarily be the priority language in terms of marketing, just because we really want to be able to get a feel for the app and know, okay, we use it every day now. This is what we like. This is what frustrates us. Because otherwise, when you design the product, it's very, you know, obviously you kind of have an idea of what makes it a good app, but it's not the same as experiencing it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'm happy to be your guinea pig for Portuguese. Just saying.
Yeah, we'll let you know when we release it.
Thank you. But yeah, after, you know, it seems like it's all kind of very easy and simple for you with Copycat Cafe. And even if it's not, you know, I want to just steer a little bit to the second venture that you started building fairly recently. Yeah. And my first question is why? I mean, you've got something good going on. Why did you decide to dive into GEO? Is it simply, you know, to ride the AI wave, or was there a different reason?
So there are several reasons. One of them is that, so at the point when I started Lawlite, I felt very demotivated by French Together. Traffic was declining. I wasn't really getting that many messages anymore from users saying, hey, I went to Paris and it was great. I didn't really know where to go with the product. And at the same time, I was on LinkedIn and X and talking to so many founders and listening to podcasts and basically hearing constantly, do not do B2C ever. It's a terrible idea. And so I just started thinking, you know, like maybe they're right and I should just do B2B, you know, something that's at least to me seems much easier, more profitable. And yeah, at the same time, since the traffic was declining, I figured, okay, maybe I can try to rank on ChatGPT instead. And I tried some of the tools, but I found them very, I don't know, I just found that I didn't really know what to do with the information they gave me. And so I created Lawlite and tried to make it more actionable. And since my co-founder Noor at the time was working in PR, we figured, okay, we will specifically target PR agencies. And yeah, so that's basically how it got started.
Okay. Yeah, I'm there with you. When I first got a taste for this kind of tool to, you know, to see how you're ranking on GPT, Perplexity and whatnot, I thought, okay, so like, where do we go from here? Like,
exactly.
A nice dashboard, but I don't know what to do with it. So
yeah,
I can totally understand. So yeah, what did you learn there? Because I think that, like, quote unquote, because I've been going through some of your LinkedIn posts, you said it was a classical case of building a solution looking for a problem, right? So, and I mean, at the same time, people made it into a problem, I guess. Like, okay, we're not ranking on ChatGPT. So now it's real, and now, you know, all the platforms like Oderly or Peak, they are actually picking up quite a bit and are giving you a bit more actionable things. So yeah, what was the biggest problem? And do you think that maybe you could have stuck to it a little longer to see how it develops?
So there were two problems. The first problem in terms of product was that after creating my own thing and making it more actionable and, you know, telling people, okay, these are the exact topics being discussed, these are the exact publications that influence these responses, I basically ended up looking at the topics and publication and feeling like, yeah, I mean, of course, you know, like, yeah, a financial app, a financial SaaS appears a lot in financial newspaper, financial publications. A website about language learning appears a lot in education publication. You know, there was basically no surprises. And I kept having demos with companies and talking to them. And it was basically always the same. You know, it was like, yeah, we get all this information, but actually we already have our PR team working to be published in these places. We already have our content team creating content around these topics. And so it's not that the information was useless, it's just that they already knew this information. And so, you know, someone who started, who will start only with geo would probably find this information useful. But for a big company with an existing content team, PR team and everything, it was just not that, you know, you could just look at the information and be like, okay, sure. And so I realized at the end that I had just recreated the same thing that frustrated me in the first place. And on a personal level, I also realized that the B2B dream I had, where I thought, oh, B2B would be so perfect, I will like it much better, was just fake, like in my mind at least. You know, like I just thought B2B would be great. I would be building something super useful. And what I found is that I had a lot of calls with companies and the employees I would talk to would be quite disconnected from the end results. And so I just didn't feel the passion I felt talking to language learning customers where, you know, you could talk to someone and they would be like, but yeah, I have some family in Portugal and I wish I could connect with them better. And, you know, finally feel like I'm one of them. And at some point, I just realized I actually miss language learning. And then, you know, I also started talking to my now co-founder, Noor. And we just realized, you know, she could actually work on the marketing side. I could work on the product development mostly, which is what I prefer. And you know, we also realized the reason French Together was stagnating is because, I mean, I wasn't that motivated anymore, but also because it's very hard to build a product and market it at the same time, at least for this kind of product. And so now that we work...
You've been doing it alone for how long?
I think I'm very bad with dates and timelines, but I think 13 years.
Wow, crazy.
Yeah. And you know, I always thought... Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I hired a content writer at some point, but for the most part, I was doing all the marketing, all the coding, everything. And initially, I thought that's actually what I wanted to do. But yeah, now I actually think I prefer having a co-founder. And also, it allows me to focus on what I actually enjoy the most, knowing that someone is, you know, actually growing the company and that we can work as a team and, you know, kind of bounce back ideas and everything.
Yeah. I've heard that kind of story quite a few times, I think. Like founders who have really enjoyed taking it from the ground up and like really building a vision that they thought should live, but then getting somebody to, you know, to help them scale. I mean, that's basically the model how SaaS Group works, right? We get amazing founders who build something great and then, okay, maybe to give it a little push, they need someone else. Mm-hmm. So that makes great sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think building alone can work great as well. It just depends a lot on the product, on the goals, on everything. I just, you know, I love doing it alone for 13 years, but now I'm even more excited about doing it with someone else.
Yeah. So how has Copycat Cafe been growing for 13 years as a B2C, and what was the difference between that and how you were trying to grow Lorelight?
So I would say Copycat Cafe grew very organically, as in basically for most of the 13 years, all that I did was publish content on the blog and get people to visit the blog. And then, you know, they will sign up for the newsletter, go through like a welcome sequence. That was also like a mini evergreen launch. And that's basically how I would make money. With Copycat Cafe, it was much more intentional. You know, like we really thought hard. With Lorelight, it was more intentional. And we thought very hard about our positioning, who to reach out to. We wrote on LinkedIn, did a lot of cold emailing. And so I would say it was much more structured. And we also found that the places where we could find customers were quite different. As in, for Copycat Cafe, customers kind of find us on their own. And we didn't really use social media. Whereas for Lorelight, actually, we found that LinkedIn was working great. And that's simply posting every once in a while, like a few times per week, actually was very effective at getting people to contact us, including companies that were honestly way bigger than our target audience. Because initially we actually thought with Lorelight we would be targeting kind of small companies. And what happened is we basically only got billion-dollar companies reaching out to us, which was slightly terrifying.
It's and, a good yeah. problem to have.
Yeah, good problem to have, but it was also, it didn't actually match, I guess, in terms of product founder fit. As in, you know, I kind of wanted to have a chill business where I don't have like huge, you know, I don't have to like wake up at 3 a.m. and immediately bring everything back online and feel like everything is mission critical. And during calls with companies, I will also realize they had requirements that would be kind of difficult to fulfill for me. And I also didn't want to hire more people. So that's actually another reason I shut down Lorelight. I just felt like it wasn't really going where I wanted it to go.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So yeah. you with Copycat Cafe, you're more in this kind of lifestyle business where you can just do what you like to do. And especially now with focusing on product building.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and your language learning is... I would say it's easier to maintain a language learning app because it doesn't need, you know, with Lorelight, I had to constantly keep up with the technology. Like every week there was a new model, a new way to interact with AI. And so it kind of felt like it was a constant battle to keep up. Whereas a language learning doesn't really change that much over time. Like now there is more AI, you can talk to an AI, but these are all features that you can build. And if you don't touch them for a while, they are still very useful.
Yeah,
so it's a slower.
At the same time, you know, I think even when ChatGPT just arrived and you could start talking to it, I think one of the big topics that was discussed was language learning, and that, you know, you can build your own program and you can, you know, automate ChatGPT, send you some tasks and yada, yada, yada. So. Mm-hmm. Were there actually cases where you could say for sure, okay, these two customers went away because they are talking to ChatGPT?
Actually, not really. In my experience, at least no one has ever told me, hey, I canceled because all I need is ChatGPT. Usually people just cancel because they are not motivated anymore. Or occasionally they will go to a competitor, but... I actually feel like honestly talking to my target audience, most of them possibly don't even know what ChatGPT is. I feel like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like honestly, apart from people in tech and in SaaS, most of the everyday people I talk to, I mean, they know about ChatGPT, but they also don't use it that much. And the thing also about using ChatGPT for language learning is that you still need to have a pretty good base level to be able to converse with it. Meaning, you know, it's the same as like a lot of people have this idea of, okay, if I move to a foreign country, so like in your case, if you move to Portugal, then you will suddenly be surrounded by Portuguese people and then you will become fluent. But the thing is that unless you already have a good enough base level of Portuguese, what usually happens if you just move to a target country is you get overwhelmed and end up mostly speaking English because it's really hard to go from, you know, just knowing how to say, hi, how are you, to actually using the language. And I think it's the same problem if you use ChatGPT. It's too much of a gap between where you are and where you need to be. And so with Copycat Cafe, we have a lot of progressive lessons that slowly build you up, teach you the language, and help you, you know, actually get to a level where you can increasingly say more and more. Mm-hmm. But if you use AI on its own, you don't really have this progression, which makes it really difficult.
Yeah, I always, again, with all my traveling experience, I've always heard people say, yeah, if you need to start learning a language or speaking the language, you just move to that country and that's it. In like half a year, you are fluent. And, you know, no. It never worked. I'm like, how do you magically get the language into, like, does it takes half a year to load into your brain. Like, what
exactly
does it mean?
Yeah, that's why I hate this advice, because then, you know, you meet a lot of expats who have been in the country for years, barely speak the language and feel super guilty, and then think there is something wrong with them because they were told they would naturally pick it up.
Exactly. I was shamed very recently by a taxi driver in Vietnam who learned that I've lived here for almost 3 years and only could say hello and please don't make it spicy.
Yeah, well, that's useful still.
Yeah, true. But tell me, okay, so I think we've established that so far you've been mostly kind of investing in SEO, and I guess maybe it's also virality, like word of mouth in a way, and your personal brand, let's say, even though it's not on LinkedIn and we never really talk about it unless it's on LinkedIn. But anyway, how are you planning? Because now you've announced that Copycat Cafe is still growing, you know, you're adding languages. Are there any things, tools that you're investing in? Like, for example, I was telling my partner about you guys and he immediately said, okay, do they use partnerships? Do they partner with that creator and that blogger and that influencer with, you know, Portuguese learning, for example? And I'm like, yeah, good question. Do you?
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Yeah, actually. So back when it was still called French Together, I did partner with two influencers. And they put, so the first one actually put together a few videos and they did really well. But back then I was working on it alone. And I basically came into the same problem I always had, which is I didn't have time to both improve the product, talk to customers, and, you know, handle all the, I guess, influencer marketing. And so I kind of paused that. Now that I have a co-founder, she will actually, well, she has been reaching out to people, which, you know, is how I ended up talking to you. So we are doing a lot of this, a lot of PR also to try to get featured in various publications. We are also, well, we are updating the blog content to try to regain a bit of our SEO traffic. My co-founder will also be reaching out to schools and more business customers. Yeah. Apart from that, honestly, we basically have we use Linear to organize all our product ideas, everything. And we have a giant list of random ideas to try. Since we just rebranded from French Together to Copycat Cafe, we haven't had much time to try things yet, but our goal is to basically go through the list, try a little bit of everything and see what works basically. So for more, I think in roughly 2 weeks, we will start maybe Google ads, Facebook ads, Reddit ads, and, you know, just basically see what works. But that's very different to what I did back when I was alone running French Together, because I wasn't actually doing anything marketing-wise, really, apart from working on the positioning and publishing content.
So, but yeah, now... Yeah, since you changed from... Because somehow, you know, for me, this is Copycat Cafe.
Yeah, of course.
French Together rebranded, right, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I just had another podcast with the founder who rebranded very, very recently. And he said that basically... people who love the product and who have been getting a lot of value from it, because they didn't just rebrand, they also repositioned and started focusing on certain things. And the customers who have already just used the product for that, they didn't care. They were like, okay, we really don't give a damn what your name is. Let's be honest. We love the product and what you do. But at the same time, a few churned and a few have been asking, okay, is it the same thing? You know, people who have been kind of eyeing them. So what happened with you guys? What happened to the traffic? Were customers asking, you know, what's happening with the product? How does it affect me? Mm-hmm. So what has been the journey there?
Okay, so yeah, when we rebranded, we changed the name, obviously, but we also changed the positioning to be much more, well, I wouldn't say aggressive, but much more opinionated. So that's actually one thing. When I shut down Lawlight, one of my conclusions was that if you want to be very visible in AI search, you need a brand that's not completely forgettable. And so I came to this conclusion, and then I looked at French Together and I was like, yeah, it's a cute enough brand. The name sounds kind of nice, but it's pretty boring, I would say. And so the idea with Copycat Cafe was to pick a name that's slightly more provocative, in the sense that obviously most people don't really like being called copycats. And we wanted to kind of flip the script and tell people, you know what, being a copycat is actually how you learn your native language. And it's the best way to learn a language. So, you know, you should really go for it, not feel any shame, and just copy native speakers, try to match their pronunciation and all of this. So yeah, we did this. We released the new brand, the new design. Initially, there were not that many reactions, to be honest. We got a few emails from people who said they really liked that the method had been simplified a lot. And so now they could, you know, do a quick lesson versus 40 minutes before. So one thing I regret actually is that we probably didn't communicate enough to reassure people. Because we got quite a few panicked emails being like, oh my God, you changed everything. It looks different. Are you going to keep the method, or is it going to basically be Duolingo now? And, you know, we just realized that to us, it was obvious that we were keeping the same core learning philosophy, but we didn't really say it. And so, yeah, we got a lot of panicked messages. We also got some people who didn't really like the new methods, or a few that were, you know, just very anxious. But after reassuring people and, you know, telling them, hey, we still have the same goals, we don't want to make a completely different app, we are just refining it, most of the people who initially had bad reactions came back a week later and were like, you know what, actually I kind of like it. We did get a few people who churned and were like, this is horrible, I hate it. We got a few people saying, this is such a stupid name, and also changed. But overall, I would say the feedback has been very, very positive. One thing that happened that is actually quite bad is that the traffic from Google pretty much collapsed. It has been slowly recovering, but it's a pretty slow process. I think most likely it will take a few weeks or months before it goes back. On the plus side, the new brand is actually much stronger, and everything I think converts roughly 3 to 5 times better. So yeah, we lost a lot of traffic, but actually conversions are slightly up just because the conversion rate is way up.
Yeah, that's interesting. So yeah. If you were talking to, you know, to a founder who's anxious about a possible rebrand, what would your advice be? Is it clear communication with your customer base?
My advice would be first to ask yourself, why are you rebranding exactly? You know, what is your goal? Then I will also make sure to maybe talk to customers to really make sure you know, again, why you're rebranding, what problems you're trying to fix. So in our case, the problem was that we felt the brand was too forgettable and that it was just very hard to compete in a usually crowded markets. But yeah, I would say my advice is really ask yourself, do you actually need to rebrand? Because a rebrand can work great. It can, you know, increase your conversions, make your brand better, but it can also backfire in many cases. So I would, yeah, make sure you actually need to rebrand. And when you do it, make sure to actually talk to your customers and reassure them. And the last point I would say is maybe don't do what we did, which is change the name, design, positioning, and the core way your product works all at the same time, because it's pretty way too much.
Yeah. How long did it take to do it all?
I think it took maybe... So I actually worked on the... Like, I already had the idea for the name maybe 2 years ago, but then I kind of gave up on language learning. And so I think 2 years ago, I probably spent 2-3 weeks on the new positioning. And then recently, implementing everything was fairly quick. I think it probably took roughly 2 weeks as well to just change the design. So we worked with a designer as well, which has helped a lot. But yeah, so implementing the design and everything probably took 2 weeks overall.
Okay. All right. So not, well, on the one hand, a very lengthy process. On the other, if you take the leap, it can be fast.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, you know, I just have a couple more questions for you.
Sure.
They're the usual ones here.
Yeah.
So 13 years doing B2C, growing tired of it, going to mm-hmm. B2B,
yeah.
and finally realizing that B2C is still your gig.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think has been the biggest win and the biggest failure? And it can be for Copycat Cafe, or it can be for you as a founder.
Well, I mean, it sounds a bit cheesy, but I think for me, the biggest win overall is to have had a product where people actually come to me and tell me, hey, you actually did something meaningful for me. You know, like now I can actually go to France and not feel like a complete stranger. Or one word actually a lot of people used, a stupid American tourist. You know, and so it's, I think that's honestly, yeah, that's pretty much my biggest win, to have actually allowed people to actually feel integrated and not just like foreigners.
Yeah, that's awesome. And the failure? Or anything, like a biggest learning that you're taking into this new rebranded version?
Well, I mean, it's, I think my biggest failure, to be honest, was just, I mean, it's hard to say it's a failure per se, but I think it's just not, I guess, not doing enough marketing, not in the sense that I should just have done more marketing, because the thing is that I knew all this time, hey, I should spend more time on marketing. But I just felt like I couldn't do it because I didn't have any time for it. You know, the traditional advice is to just, well, prioritize marketing. But the thing is that when you have customers and you have bugs and you actually need to fix the bugs, you can't actually prioritize marketing. So I would say my biggest failure was to not either look for a co-founder earlier or delegate way more. Because if I had done that earlier, I would have been able to actually spend time on marketing.
Exactly. Yeah, but it's also something that we deal a lot with at SaaS Group. When we talk to solo founders mm-hmm. or like founders with super lean teams, so that's exactly what they're saying. So you have a product and at the end of the day, you know, product wins, because marketing can be awesome, but, you know, people are just not there because everything's buggy mm-hmm. and it just doesn't work for them. But they've been focusing on building a great product. And at the end of the day, that's what drives people.
Exactly.
So now you have
that's
an advantage.
Yeah. I think overall, another failure for me would be just that I always assumed I wanted to be a solo founder and that it was the only way to go for me. Because, you know, I had this very pure idea of like, it's so nice to be a solo founder. I'm fully independent. I don't depend on anyone. But now that I, you know, actually do it with a co-founder, I realize actually it can be really nice to depend on someone and not be alone when you make decisions, to be able to share your wins and everything, you know.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, I'm glad you're not alone anymore. But yeah, the last one is always about a hack. And mm-hmm. it can be anything. It can be the smallest thing that helps, you know, with the day-to-day, but just anything that you think other founders could appreciate.
Honestly, right now, my biggest hack by far is to simply use Cloud Code for everything. As in, I don't use it just for coding. I just basically set up a system where almost everything can be done with Cloud Code, including publishing content on the blog. And this actually has helped me a lot to, update everything, keep everything up to date. and have like one clear system where everything is connected. So for more, if I, you know, when we did the rebrand, obviously we changed the name and we changed the design and everything. And we basically use CloudScout to update everything, including our documentation, our website, the blog, to rewrite emails. And it just makes things way faster because you don't have to like jump between systems. It's just all one system.
Interesting. I think we're trying to, well, as a non-technical person, I'm kind of trying to incorporate N8N into a lot of processes. Yeah. But to be completely honest, it is quite complicated and terrifying most of the time, and to like connect all the pieces. So maybe you're right, and having just this one thing that works for everything is great. But it's outside of my league for now.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a bit of a learning curve if you're non-technical, but I also think it's actually easier than most people think. So my advice would be to still try to, if I were you, I would download the Cloud desktop app in which you can actually use CloudScout with a graphical interface. And I would just honestly start playing around with it. And I think you will find that actually a lot of things are easier than you think. And that once you get used to it, you can actually use it to do a lot of cool things.
Okay. All right. Maybe that's what I'm doing Monday evening.
Yeah. Sounds good. Let me know how it goes.
Sure, I will. Thank you so much, Benjamin. I mean, it's a great story. Yeah. Like I said, it was really, really inspiring. I was dreading thinking about learning another language. And when I saw this post of yours, I was like, okay, that's exactly, you know how I, sorry, just to derailing this podcast a little bit. But I had a moment when I had to learn Spanish because I was moving to Peru. And I only had like 5 months to do it. And I started watching a lot of, I was very much into cooking. And I was started to watch a lot of cooking shows in Spanish and just saying what they were saying. And basically that's how I got past this language barrier, learned the first words. And when I actually came to Peru, I was speaking.
Nice. So, yeah, I mean, that's, yes, that's basically our method, you know, learn by copying.
Yeah.
And ideally learn by copying something you're passionate about.
Yeah, amazing. All right, then I'm looking forward to Portuguese. Let me know.
Yeah, we'll let you know. And thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
Thank you.
It was really fun.
Of course.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, take care. Bye.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Thanks for listening. SaaS Unbound is brought to you by SaaS Group. We're a long-term home for great B2B SaaS. We buy, keep the team and brand DNA, and help with the boring stuff like hiring and finance so founders can truly focus on building great products. If you're a founder who'd like to be featured or explore an acquisition, reach out through the form on our website or email me at anna@saas.group.